Guys, welcome to Breaking Down Current Affairs of the World. This is your host Aryan Ghosh speaking. And frankly, today's episode we had actually planned to cover the entire issue in Taiwan because obviously a couple of weeks ago, about a month ago, there were lots of incursions taking place by China because Chinese bombers were violating Taiwanese airspace, and there was obviously a great dispute about that. And we thought we'd make this huge episode on describing exactly how that issue has been built up over the years, but we'll be actually bringing that episode out in some time. But today I think we should discuss the issue in Ukraine. I know we did an episode about a couple of weeks ago, but the fact is that ever since then things have radically changed in the border situation, and I think we should really discuss it right now. So let's first look at the situation ever since our episode last two weeks ago. Primarily, the US and Russia held talks in Vienna, which basically were aimed at de-escalating tensions. Now, those ended up nowhere, and basically, the two sides said that they would continue talking. And the same time, what's happened ever since then is that a lot of military advancement has taken place with the Russian border along Ukraine, and even in the Crimean Peninsula and the Donbas regions, which are right now being fought for by Russian separatists and the Ukrainian government. Then you currently have Russia amassing almost number of other troops coming to 127,000, and some estimates put it around 150,000, and even coming all the way to 200,000. So it is getting to that level at this point. Not to mention that even there have been number of videos on social media which primarily show Russian tanks and rocket launchers, heavy weapons equipment, basically moving wire chains, and some military researchers do think that this is basically going all the way to the border with Ukraine. At the same time, Ukraine has also been arming itself. Primarily, NATO has been increasing its military presence in Ukraine further. At least from what has been known, the US has sent a number of private contractors, then military advisors, and various other experts to basically help the Ukrainian government to shore up its defenses. Now, at the same time, you also the British government having sent anti-tank weapons, anti-tank missiles primarily to Ukraine. And actually, there was a bit of a problem which came up in this delivery apparently. Like, the plane which was supposed to be taking this anti-tank missiles was supposed to go to German airspace, but apparently the German government didn't allow it, and so they had to move all the way around the German airspace and had to go to Ukraine. We'll be actually covering this angle a bit later right now, but yeah. And then you find Canada having sent its own special forces to the Ukraine, basically to train its soldiers, and at the same time basically to ensure that the Canadian embassy in Ukraine can be evacuated in case of a complete invasion of the country. Now, speaking about embassies too, you find right now Russia has also been apparently slowly emptying its own embassies and consulates in Ukraine. And this could be another, it was a slow evacuation, it wasn't exactly quick, so there's no indication of what this meant. It could be a threat, it could be an indication, but yeah, I mean, at least right now, looking at the current situation, not to mention the fact that Russia has also started placing Iskander-M short-range ballistic missiles across the border with Ukraine. Now, these ballistic missiles basically have the potential of carrying nuclear warheads. And we're not looking into nuclear warfare in the region. I mean, that's literally next level kind of thing. But right now, at least the way troops have been amassed in the region, it's understandable that now Russia is now going to invade Ukraine in some way or the other. I mean, Vladimir Putin is not someone who comes with empty threats. I mean, if Russia were to back down from this kind of a situation, I mean, it would literally mean that basically Russia is not serious about this kind of situation where there is literally almost a little war. So primarily the situation, Russia won't back down, but then again people are still trying to figure out exactly what is the extent of this invasion, because some analysts have primarily seen that this could be an invasion to just conquer the Donetsk region and Donbas region, which primarily they were already very much competed by Russian backed separatists, but exactly they are still a part of Ukraine. But it could be Russia is going to simply make it official and go and annex the entire damn thing. But it could also mean that Russia is now going into a possible invasion right all the way to Kiev and then capture the Ukrainian capital and take over the Ukrainian government. That could also be another like situation. The number of basically situations under which Russia could invade Ukraine, because Russia has now opened up number of fronts, at least I think three across the border with Ukraine. And the thing is, guess what? Belarus is also helping them out now. And I mean, to actually look at this from a perspective, last year in Belarus there were a number of protests which took place against the authoritarian government of Alexander Lukashenko, who's also referred to as Europe's last dictator. Now, I mean, just because he's Europe's last dictator doesn't mean he still can't remain one, because elections were pretty much rigged as usual, as you would expect. And now, basically, all the opposition members from opposition leaders from Belarus had to leave, or they were basically exiled in some way, because of the fact that Belarus was, in fact, cracking down upon these opponents. And many of them had gone to the EU. The EU had pushed for sanctions against Belarus and Lukashenko's government. But during this very, very volatile period when Lukashenko was in political turmoil, perhaps, and even Europe was basically trying to ensure that Belarus is primarily isolated in the continent, Russia came to help. And President Putin had helped Belarus in a number of ways, both military and in economic ways, which basically goes on to show that Russia has been increasing its stronghold in Europe. And this has been now what we're getting to see is that with decreasing American influence, that's basically because of what's happened over the past couple of years regarding the various debacles regarding the Iran nuclear deal or even the situation in Afghanistan. It's understandable that now US influence in regions is slowly declining, because you find this incident happening in Central Asia, where in Kazakhstan, the Kazakh government was primarily shooting down protesters and calling them terrorists primarily. And I mean, honestly, there is no pretext to calling these civilians terrorists, because I think it should be known the definition of terrorism is given in the UN General Assembly Resolution 49/60. That is basically clause 1, 2, and 3, which basically give this whole overview definition of terrorism. And if countries actually abided by that, we would find actual terrorists being labeled terrorists and not like all the organizations which are labeled as terrorists. But yeah, I mean, you found these protesters basically creating a lot of havoc in Kazakhstan, because all the protests were peaceful, but then you had certain extremist elements in these protesters, which in turn caused, I mean, it gave the Kazakh government the excuse it required to ban them as terrorists, right? And so we started shooting them down. A shoot-to-kill order basically was issued. And since Kazakhstan is basically a member of the CSTO alliance, which is basically kind of a Russian-led NATO alliance of sorts, like, therefore, the CSTO basically was invited to send its troops to Kazakhstan. And Russia obviously was the first to send its own troops and basically peacekeeping troops, quote-unquote peacekeeping. I mean, peacekeeping troops who open fire. Right. But even then, Russia had started increasing its influence in Kazakhstan quite a lot. And this is, and I mean, Kazakhstan has always been known to have influence which are rather anti-US than usual, primarily like from Russia and China. And what basically has been happening is that ever since the peacekeeping troops went, they came back again, I think a couple of weeks ago. So we are right now seeing a time when Russia is also asserting its influence, because I mean, if it's been noticed, since 2017 to 2018, I mean, let's take it from the time of Trump administration came into power. I mean, you've looked into the fact that China has been very much the debate which is in the entire international sphere. And I mean, there was this trade war which took place, and China came into the center of it. Then China also has been competing with the US in South China Sea, which is a very legal dispute. And then you also have primarily the issue of Taiwan again, like which involves the US and China. Not to mention the US apparently has now more troops in Taiwan, training the Taiwanese army. And China could be launching an invasion anytime in that. It's like something which is pretty much there. And you find China taking up most of the argument primarily. Therefore, right now you find that China is completely out of the picture. There is no discussion on Taiwan, no discussion on South China Sea, no discussion on trade war, nothing that's all, not even BRI. Because right now the focus is all on Russia, because Russia has been dominating the news so far. And this has been something which President Vladimir Putin has been able to do, primarily change the entire narrative of it. That, you know, even though the US may consider China very important or very adversarial power, Russia is quite much capable of also taking that position. Because, I mean, last year also we had covered this entire thing about the Donbass region, where there was quickly there was this huge military equipment going to Donbass, and they were going to go in, and people thought it was going to be a full-on invasion. But then what happened was that the troops came back, but the equipment was still there. And obviously in December in 2021, there were troops came back. And now we are finding that different kinds of weapons are being mobilized on the border with Ukraine. Not to mention that there have also been internal attempts within Ukraine to basically change the status quo. Like, if you look at, I think, 2004, when Russia first began meddling into Ukraine's democratic affairs, they had brought a pro-Russia president to power. And in 2013, when their president was ousted from power, basically because Ukraine at that time was wanting to sign a deal with the EU, but because of Russian influence, decided with Russia instead. And that in turn caused huge uprisings, and this in turn toppled the then government of Ukraine. Then in 2014, then obviously Russia comes in, holds a quote-unquote so-called fake referendum. And then what happens is that people basically vote, people of Crimea vote to basically join Russia, and then Russian forces come in and completely annex Crimea. What follows is a showdown in the UN Security Council, when you find the US trying to back a resolution to basically condemn this annexation. I think Russia was the one to veto it, China abstained, and the other countries all voted in favor, I believe. I don't remember very clearly. And basically then after that, the UNGA2 passed a resolution which in turn condemned this whole thing. But since General Assembly resolutions aren't legally binding, they're simply more like op-eds or opinion articles of the UN. But again, as I said, opinion articles don't affect anyone, right? I mean, you're not obligated to do something because someone else has an opinion about you, right? So the same way, Russia has obviously not back down from there, other than backing separatists in the Donetsk region and the Donbass region too, and they are competing with the Ukrainian government for control of these territories. What's exactly new about this threat is that the threat is 100 times more, and there are lots of indications that Russia is preparing for a complete military invasion. Because yesterday, apparently, there were 6 amphibious Russian vessels, basically warships, which are basically left their bases, and they travel across the English Channel, and apparently they are on their way to the Black Sea, which is basically close to Ukraine. The France, Belgium and the UK spotted these ships. France apparently sent a warship to look into what these ships were up to or where they're basically going. And this means now Russia mobilizing its northern fleet, its navy, to start moving towards the Black Sea, basically means that this could be used for troop movements, for equipment and a number of other things, not to mention the fact that Russia has also been increasing its bombers in air bases close to Ukraine. Now, this primarily shows that Russia is in fact preparing for that invasion. Now, why I spoke about Belarus all the time was because Russia has started sending troops to Belarus. The S-400 surface-to-air missiles have been now seen along the Russian, the Belarusian border with Ukraine. And now, since Lukashenko and Putin had finally had actually built up close ties in this entire time, what's happened is you find Russia and Belarus cooperating on a military level. They have stated that they are simply going for joint military exercises. But if you look at the weapons which are now being used for joint military exercise, like this S-400 surface and missile systems, or even the number of troops and tanks going to the region, it shows that this isn't just a military exercise. It's going to be something more. And that means that there is now a fourth front to attacking Ukraine. Now, this basically opens up the argument of whether Belarus would want to attack Ukraine or not. Because, I mean, look, if Russian troops from Belarus can be used to invade Ukraine, it may as well be like Belarus sending its own army and going after Ukraine as well. And I mean, come on, don't want to make any World War references, but that sounds a bit like Germany and Italy of the 1930s. So we have a situation here where there are these two countries basically which are armed and ready to attack Ukraine at any moment. Even the White House is now primarily, at least officially stated, that there could be and that there could be an invasion into Ukraine at any moment now. I mean, there was this small problem which President Biden created when he stated that, you know, that if there's a minor invasion, you know, there won't be very tough sanctions. I mean, honestly, I would have suggested a step like this would be better in like backdoor negotiations, but this thing happening outside is a bit problematic. But yeah, primarily. And honestly, you know, what the funniest thing is that I think history repeats itself in the worst ways possible. Like, let's remember the Munich Conference of 1938, I believe, right? The Munich Conference was where basically Nazi Germany, Fascist Italy, and the UK and I think France had basically met to discuss what would happen to Czechoslovakia. And because Hitler wanted to basically invade Czechoslovakia, right? But what they did instead was they said that we'd allow you to take Sudetenland, because Sudetenland I think had majority Germans, and that's all. And I think that's okay. And if you take this, it'll be okay with us. So now what's happening is obviously after Sudetenland, what happened was Hitler at the end violated that treaty and it went and completely invaded Czechoslovakia. And guess what? In those negotiations in Munich, Czechoslovakia wasn't even represented. I mean, come on. So you have the same situation here where the US and Russia are discussing Ukraine's fate and Ukraine isn't even part of the negotiating table. So I think Ukraine really deserves to be there because you're talking about a country's fate and a country not being present at the negotiating table doesn't make sense. Really doesn't make sense. Now, let's have a look at the various angles, lots of things coming on, honestly, and this is very important. Let's first have a look at what's happening on the Western side of things, right? So, the West obviously says that this is going to be massive consequences, sanctions you've never heard of, and all that. I mean, honestly, even once Trump had, I think, spoken about, President Trump had spoken about hellfire for North Korea if they continue the nuclear missile tests. And guess what? In this 1 month, four hypersonic missile tests. I mean, come on. Are you kidding me? So, the American word for sanctions of a different kind or something of a different scale is, I mean, I don't really see how it helps. If you're talking about individual sanctions on President Putin, because President Putin has had many assets internationally too, and he has his own assets in which are required for him. I mean, one of the reasons why many people say Putin is holding on to power in the Russian government is because he needs it. Because without the power in the Kremlin, he won't have enough wealth for his own, apparently. That's the conclusion. So, if you're talking about targeting Russian officials like Putin individually, that is a different kind of sanction level. But the problem is this: how does Russia then basically retaliate? Because Russia can't, I mean, it won't make sense for Russia to impose economic sanctions on the US because Russia doesn't have as much economic credibility in the world as much as the US does. So it doesn't make sense that in that way. But will Russia retire by military means? That is something which can still be assessed because these are sanctions on individuals like President Putin who are quite, who believe in, like, I mean, if you look at how President Putin has been acting in these past couple of months or years, you'll find that there is basically an increasing need for Russia to be part of the argument. And Russia cannot be out of the spectacle, out of spectrum, right? But if you're talking about economic sanctions on Russian institutions, on and I mean the economy basically need to freeze Russia's economy. I mean that's the point. Russia's economy is sanctions proof. It has become because what's happened is there has been a fine tailoring, which is almost, if you look at it, is almost the same as North Korea. Because even if you look at North Korea right now, even if you put sanctions on it, it won't work anymore. North Korea is completely closed. It's a closed economy. It's almost like that, and that is why sanctions won't have much of an effect. And even if you and the same thing with Russia too. Russia has been decreasing its debt. It has been decreasing its basically its dependence on foreign. On the foreign markets, Russia has been becoming much more much more like basically developing on its own. And at the same time, although, however, there is a problem of inflation in the economy, but Russia has, in some way or other, made the entire economy sanctions proof. So it really does not, and so it doesn't. I mean, this would have a terrible impact for even Europe, because let's get this one part right. Russian gas has always been something Europe has needed. And that's when I also come to the part about Germany I spoke. You must be remembering I told you all about right now about the fact that basically this British plane carrying the anti-tank missiles had to go all the way around German airspace to reach Ukraine. This is because apparently the German government has been, and not to mention the fact that there have been reports coming out that Germany is not willing to impose that harsh sanctions on Russia in case of a invasion in Ukraine. This is only one, like, understanding of the fact that Germany is dependent on Russian gas. I mean, there is nothing more like it. I mean, there is now, you find US senators calling upon the fact that you need to put sanctions on Nord Stream 2 once again. And you know, I mean, this is very funny, all right? Because you find the US quoting so much on hypocrisy on Russian government basically interfering in the sovereignty of countries, and we stand for the sovereignty of all nations. How about the sovereignty of Germany and Russia to conduct a deal on a nuclear, on a gas pipeline? I mean, that's basically what we're talking about here. I mean, it's a gas pipeline which transports gas from Russia to Germany. It's basically what Germany requires right now. Instead of US companies going to Asia or other continents to sell their gas, because it's much more profitable there, if you're so worried about your allies, the US should be providing gas to Europe, right? I mean, that's the equation, simple as that. So the US obviously isn't doing that, and now it expects Europe to cut off its gas from Russia. Because we do understand, sanctions on a Nord Stream 2 gas pipeline or any kind of other gas pipeline or gas or even the export of gas from Russia to Europe is going to be very harsh, because natural gas is required for a number of purposes, right? I mean, right now also it's winter, and I'm in India, it's pretty cold here. I mean, I can imagine how Europe must be, right? So, and Europeans do require such gas for their own heating and lighting purposes. Now, if you don't have that, how are you even supposed to run a country? Which is why, if Europe really wants to ensure that a situation like this doesn't basically approach where they have to be strong-armed into giving up and giving up a country to Russia, they need to start diversifying their sources of natural gas. They can't be depending on only Russia. They need to, I mean, if the US is so willing to help Europe and their allies, they need to figure out a way to ensure that they can work together on this problem of gas. I mean, you find US media and commentators in the US basically speaking about get France and Germany in line. Get them in line. Get them to work with us. Come on, man. I mean, this kind of rhetoric in one way shows that the US any political commentators in the US don't understand the need for a proper alliance. They are simply worried about, oh God, Russia is a threat. Russia is a threat. You will never imagine or never even try to balance out the fact that there is an equation wrong in how you're dealing with Europe, right? And that's the problem, because you even find in France, Macron was quite, was already in 2019, senator was brain dead. I mean, come on, there you go. And then you find in 2021, Biden making the best decision to anger him by signing the AUKUS deal, which was, I mean, bad for diplomacy at the very least. So, you know, Biden hasn't done anything after that to basically increase his influence. In the meanwhile, rather, China and India have been trying to ramp up their work with France. So, I mean, this shows that the US is not caring at all about its European allies. When it comes to things like fighting Russia, then it's all for Europe. You are with the European allies, you are supporting them every single step of the way, and all of that. Let's also consider the fact that NATO has spoken about US has spoken about the fact that NATO isn't a threat and NATO isn't a defensive alliance. That, you know, it's simply to defend countries from Russia. And, you know, you've got these commentators basically saying that what if Russia wants to invade more countries and they want protection from NATO? Then, you know, that NATO comes into help, right? I think people should remember about what happened in Yugoslavia, in Kosovo. When NATO went in and invaded based on a humanitarian intervention, there was, I mean, I would have also said Libya, but I think Libya did have backing, I mean, the Nitrin dimension Libya had backing from the UN Security Council. But Kosovo, I mean, Yugoslavia primarily, Yugoslavia, that invasion was completely, I mean, almost illegal because humanitarian intervention, even if you look at the R2P, which is, I think, by far the, I mean, it's not legal in that way, it's part of customary international law, but even the R2P document primarily mentions that any kind of humanitarian intervention still requires a particular backing and authorization by the UN Security Council. And when the NATO bombed Yugoslavia and in the name of a humanitarian intervention, that didn't happen. Which shows that NATO is more of a hostile alliance than it is a quote unquote defensive alliance. Therefore, right now it should be understood that NATO will in fact end up, I mean, therefore it was like it's not easy to trust NATO. And I mean, right now, looking at what's the political turmoil in the US, where they can't even, where lawmakers can't even seem to agree upon basic voting rights of citizens. I mean, the amount of political volatility that exists in the US right now makes it a very untrustworthy ally. I mean, Iran is like a pretty good judge for this. You have Iran, which has signed a nuclear deal in good faith in 2015, where there was an elaborate agreement upon which nuclear sites have to be stopped, how exactly IAEA is supposed to be looking into these matters, what's the limit, and you know, how exactly can Iran reduce its nuclear capabilities, and at the same time, there need not be so many sanctions on its economy. And then you have President Trump coming into power and tearing up that entire agreement apart, despite Iran not having violated a single clause of it. So, I mean, this makes the US a very untrustworthy ally. Then you're talking about a unified face in front of Russia. How are you going to be unified when you literally treat your allies like as if they are timely allies? When you approach them, when you need them, you approach them. And when they need you, you simply back out. You don't care, right? That's what's happened here. I was just talking about the fact gas has been a big issue that America hasn't helped. And while Russia actually has even done that, and now you have to face the music. Russia is using gas as a leverage, as a leveraging weapon. So, right now, obviously, at this point, U.S. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken has apparently gone to speak to Russian Foreign Minister Sergey Lavrov, but as of this moment, it's not clear, understandable what's going to happen. How are we looking at things? The U.S. believes an invasion could be very likely. They're speaking about fifth sanctions. And like so much never been seen before, and but I mean, let's have a look at how this thing goes at the end. Then let's understand how Russia looks at this entire thing. At least, far as I know, the head of the Vienna negotiations for the Russian government has stated finally that basically there comes this moment of truth when the West either accepts our demands or it simply or Russia will have to take steps to safeguard itself. Basically, Russia has given a sort of ultimatum to the US and NATO about Ukraine. I mean, the quote apparently was the countdown begins, but we don't exactly know what's the countdown, how long, what date, we don't really know. But what obviously is understood here is that Russia is now saying that it won't be used as a stalking horse. Russia will in fact move ahead with an invasion in India. I mean, although Russia has in fact not, has denied any such thing about an invasion, we all understand the troop movements, missile locations, the rocket launches, all of it shows that Russia is preparing for an invasion. So it's understandable that right now an ultimatum coming out primarily sort of indicates that the West needs to ramp this up. And I mean, what's completely not understandable is that how NATO till now has not. So right now, obviously, it's understandable that Russia will invade Ukraine at some point. Obviously, the extent of which is not understandable yet. Then we also find that basically those attempts of the coup I told you about earlier, primarily what has happened is that the US in the past 24 hours has sanctioned, has imposed economic sanction at least four Ukrainian officials who were basically allegedly working with the Russian government to topple the Ukrainian government. I mean, back in December, apparently, President Zelensky had stated that he had stopped a coup from taking place. But right now, that coup has that basically there could be other involvements of a coup taking place this time. And I mean, the US has taken action upon it. And other what is also interesting is the fact that there have been truth movements on part of other countries as well. Like, I mean, the US, Canada, and Britain is understandable, but when it comes to Sweden, which basically has this island of Gotland in the Baltic Sea, which holds on strategic importance, it fears that Gotland could come under attack from a Russian invasion of sorts. This is why Sweden has started patrolling tanks and troops in the region, at least hundreds of them. And this also shows that this could be coming into a position where a number of countries are preparing for the worst. Not to mention the fact that the US has just approved licenses to the Baltic states to start sending American weapons to the Ukrainian, to Ukraine basically. And so it shows that Europe is preparing for the worst. And that's a complete Russian invasion. And up till now, NATO has not accepted any of Russia's proposals. It hasn't taken the fact that NATO, that Ukraine shouldn't be a member of NATO, and all that NATO should be expanding eastwards or decreasing military presence of sorts. Now, I think one thing about the Russian side which has been said is that NATO had apparently agreed with Russia that it would not expand any further. But at least as far as I have seen, there is no documentation or no proof for that there was any such treaty or agreement. I mean, if a treaty was signed, it would come under the Vienna Convention law. The treaties, it would have to be like ratified by both the countries. It would have to be basically both the countries would have to abide by it. If one country violates it, the other country can also violate provisions of it. And so it doesn't really, I don't really think there's any argument on the Russian side. But obviously, as I said, NATO is a hostile alliance. So NATO's presence even being the Russian's borders is can be in fact a big threat. Therefore, NATO should understand that right now, rather than actually going into direct invasion with Russia, they could, instead of losing Ukraine to Russia, they could simply ensure Ukraine doesn't enter NATO. I mean, already you have a number of officials coming out and saying that perhaps Ukraine doesn't have to be in NATO right now. I mean, come on. Right now is gonna make a thing. Apparently, what Putin wants is this thing to be on paper. This could be a treaty. It becomes liable under the Vienna Convention or the treaties. It basically falls under an international convention, international law, and the treaty becomes official. And I mean, the US and Russia have to go up on that because otherwise, there is no other way Putin's gonna like get away from this. Because President Putin wants a winner, and that's why you have a situation where either it's make it or break it, and any small miscalculation could completely destabilize the situation. What also should be understood is right now, however, is the China angle to this. I mean China is looking at this, you know. They are looking at this entire conflict, and this is what will determine whether China will invade Taiwan or not. Because China has been engaged in multiple destabilizing activities in Asia. I mean, you have China building an illegal bridge in Bhutan, an illegal bridge even in Pangong So Lake, which is over Pangong So Lake, which is in India. And China is including capturing territories of India as well. And at the same time, China has had hostile activities in the South China Sea, plus in Taiwan. So what the US does in a situation, China will end up replicating that very thing in Taiwan. Or you, I mean, all you know, this is a coordinated effort. But still, that's not, there's not enough proof to mention that, so we can't really make that clean. That's too far-fetched apparently. So what's understandable right now is that there are two sides, no compromising. Russia's serious because now Putin can't back down, because if he backs down on this, no one will take him seriously. And then apparently there's a countdown, an ultimatum for this entire thing. There are missiles along the border of Ukraine which have the potential of carrying nuclear warheads. The US and its allies are getting troops in the region. Gas is being used as a leverage. And you have lawmakers in the US, some like very polarizing lawmakers, saying that there should be direct war between the US and Russia. You have countries amassing troops like Sweden, and you have the US, Britain, and Canada bringing their own troops in the region. I mean, if one of their troops gets killed in, say, the Russian fire, what could happen is that would be, in one way, those countries could start mobilizing the entire armies in those regions, right? That could happen. Sweden already has mobilized army in the neighborhood, in its islands. And I mean, it's almost coming to a world war situation. I mean, it's almost getting there. So, But what obviously has to be done is that today we're gonna have to find out what happens between Secretary of State Blinken and Sergey Lavrov, and that's going to decide upon how future negotiations go, if negotiations even take place, if Russia actually now gives the US a specific countdown, a specific timer. I mean, they said the countdown begins, but what's the countdown? I mean, when's the one and zero hitting? So those questions are obviously there to ask. But right now, if you ask me, is Russia going to invade Ukraine? I'm saying yes, it will invade Ukraine. But the extent of which is still understandable. Because, I mean, if what the US statements are coming out are true, that if Russia even invades, even if it crosses a part of Ukraine, a border of Ukraine, it's gonna get massive sanctions, then I think Russia will be now basically looking into how they can evade these sanctions. And I think if Russia will be facing these economic sanctions, even if they are making a minor incursion, even then it may as well invade the whole of Ukraine. And already Russia has been taking part in political destabilization within the Ukrainian government in its own ways. And this shows that President Putin is now beginning to form an iron curtain across Europe. And this is a slow for transformation, but it will in fact be more like a Cold War tension, because Russia increasing its expansion and influence in Central Asia, then doing this in Europe, increasing the amount of leverage it has in European countries, because Germany not imposing sanctions or not doing anything to go against Russia because of the Nord Stream 2 gas pipeline shows that now Russia is using gas to leverage European countries. And this could be in fact disastrous in multiple ways and have a lead to global conflict. So let's, and now all we have to do is simply watch as to what happens next. Guys, thank you a lot for listening to this episode. Hope you guys liked it. If you did, go ahead and rate us on Spotify as many stars as you think we deserve. And follow us on Instagram, where we are at Breaking Down Current Affairs, all small. And even on Twitter, where we are at Breaking Down CU1 with a capital B. So check us out there. We basically post lots of things regarding our episodes, what we're going to be bringing out. Even on Twitter, we're deciding to bring out new polls, where we'll be asking our followers basically what you guys want to listen to next, what issues you might want to bring up, and keep commenting, keep telling us exactly, give us feedback on our email, that's agforeignpolicy101@gmail.com. I'll give all these details in the description. Check it out, provide us all the feedback you guys have for us. Follow us on Spotify or any other podcasting app you listen to, and just listen in. We'll be coming soon.